Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Think Orange podcast, coming to you from the Think Orange bunker. As usual, my name is Dave. I'm your co-host, and today I am rejoined by the lovely Ashley.
What's up, everyone?
How are you, Ashley?
I'm so happy to
be
here.
It's been so long since I've sat across the table from you.
Right?
It's so good that you are standing by me now.
I am happy to be standing by you, Dave.
Because you have the right stuff.
Thanks, Dave.
Are you ready to rock and roll all night?
I am ready. Are you?
I am totally ready to do whatever we need to do to get you to sing, and I'm throwing them all out.
You are throwing them at me, Dave. I promise they'll come when they just pop into my mind.
I am not feeling the love tonight.
Dave, I've got something for you.
What?
Can you feel the love
tonight? Woo! There it is. We finally did it. It's so good. That's what I've missed. That's what I've missed on this podcast. Hey, everybody who's listening, we are so glad that you're with us, because not only do we have Ashley singing already, but we also have an amazing podcast lined up. We have some terrific friends of the pod coming on.
Yep.
Terry Scalzetti, the lead pastor from Ocean View in Myrtle Beach. We've also got a good friend of yours, Brooklyn.
Brooklyn Lindsay. Yeah, I'm so excited she's on the pod today, because she has so much experience when it comes to students, middle and high school students. She's been doing it for over 17 years. She not only does it in the U.S. of A,
right,
Dave,
right.
She travels the world. So she globally talks to students and youth. And she's one of my favorite people that walks the planet.
I mean, talk about the right stuff. She has it.
She does.
And another person who has it is Joseph Sojourner. Sojo, many of you might know him from various things. He has been the former groups director at North Point Community Church. He's also a rapper. He's a communicator. And he's the CEO of Opposite Entertainment. He's amazing, right?
He is so great.
Yeah.
So gifted.
Now, some people around the U.S. might have heard of all of these people, because at some point or another, they have been part of the Orange Tour, which is our amazing sponsor for this podcast right now, the Orange Tour. You can find out all the information at orangetour.org. It is 20 stops in 2017. Where are we going to, Ashley?
Yeah, we'll be in Atlanta, Georgia, Denver, Colorado, Boston, Massachusetts, Dallas, Texas, Charlotte, North Carolina, Orlando, Florida, Austin, Texas, all over the place.
I mean, we are going everywhere. You no longer just have to come to the Orange Conference, because we come to you thanks to the Orange Tour, who are sponsors of this pod. Now, one of the things we discuss on the Orange Tour, of course, is the intentionality around small groups, right?
Yep.
Now, you've been a small groups director. What do you love about small groups with students?
Well, I think that you get to know the real them.
Yeah.
I mean, in small groups, that's where growth happens, and that's where you see like the fruit of what God's doing in each of them.
Yep.
And especially in specific phases when they can understand it and actually accept Jesus as their savior and make it a faith of their own.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. I love that I get all of my kids, I get to experience them being in small groups and hear the stories that they have and see the growth that comes out of what they learn in their small groups. And really, small groups is a big part of our theme for this month, which is obviously family and community.
Yeah.
Two things that are super important. So we're going to kick things off with Terry Scalzetti.
Yeah, and he's going to be expanding on my conversation with Chef and breaking down biblically why leading small is the best approach for your students, kids, and really your adults.
Yeah, and then straight after that, we're going to hear a interview that I did with Brooklyn and Sojo. You weren't around. I think you were shooting videos and being super busy and writing books and all sorts of
amazing
things.
But you probably did fabulous.
I think it went really, really well, because Brooklyn and Sojo really know their stuff and they really unpack a lot of what Terry talks about. It's really good. So take it away, Terry.
If you're in this room, we're going to focus a lot on what it means to be an amazing small group leader, what it means to have relationship, build relationship with your students, your middle school student, your elementary child, your preschool child, how you can really make a major difference in your churches week in and week out. So if you're a small group leader, it's just as important that you know what you are not as that you know what you are. Some of you in this room, if I ask you, in fact, let me do this right now. What is a small group leader? What do you think your role is as a small group leader? What are some of the things that you portray as a small group leader? Let me see some hands. What's a small group leader? Yeah.
To facilitate learning.
Facilitate learning. By the way, you have great focus, because you were on the stage yesterday and did a phenomenal job. Yeah. Facilitate, absolutely. What else?
Listener.
Listener, you're a listener.
Mentor.
A mentor.
Consistency.
Consistency, we're going to talk a lot about that. You're building relationships. You're coaching. You're teaching. You're protecting. You're frustrated. Oh, wait, sorry, that's not in the notes. But truth is that a small group leader is a little bit about all of those things. It's not just one of those things. It's a lot of those things. So you'd have to know when you walk into a small group leadership role, and by the way, if you're a church leader and you have a position description that's clearly defined for a small group leader, that you don't have a hallway conversation and say, hey, you'd be great at this. Why don't you come on in? That you actually have a position description that talks about, hey, you're a little bit of all these things. I just want you to know. When you expect more and not less out of your volunteers, when you unpack those things, you have amazing, amazing results. When you lead small, you simply make a choice to invest strategically in the lives of a few over time so that you can help them build an authentic faith. An authentic faith. This is really, really important because God did create us for community. He created us for community. Jesus illustrated community, and the church practices community. Obviously, we know the illustration. Jesus had his disciples, but did he love or did he spend equal amount of time between all of his disciples? No. Who were his closest? Who did he hang out the most with? Pete, Jim, and John. Peter, James, and John. That was his inner tribe. That was his inner circle. And so Jesus illustrates community. He illustrated in, I'm going to invest more in a few for an exponential impact. And we're going to talk about what that means as a small group leader. This is 1 Thessalonians 2:8. So we cared for you because we loved you so much. We were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but what? But our lives as well. Some of you are coming in here and we're about to unpack some amazing principles in Lead Small. I will tell you, and this is not a shameless plug, I will tell you, I'm an associate pastor down at a church. We have small groups. When this book came out, when this resource came out, we bought all of them as training guides for our small group leaders. Because when we got done looking at it, got done reading it, when we got done discussing things with Reggie and we talked about those things, we said, it would be amazing if all of our small group leaders believed in these principles. Because if we had an army of leaders who actually cared about the few and actually invested more, we expected more, not less, in our volunteers, and they actually did some of these principles, that we could see amazing results. And we have, in the course of a year, we have some amazing stories to tell. And so we invest our lives as a small group leader. So here we go. You got your helmets on. You ready for some learning? You got your bubble mowers? You ready to go? So here, first principle. Let me have a little fun with you. First principle is, as a small group leader, we need to learn what it means to be present. Now, interaction time. What do you think that means, being present? If you're a small group leader and you have a preschool class, when I say you need to be present, what does that mean? You need to be there. You need to show up. You need to be present. How many of you are, let's say, elementary coordinators or a children's pastor? How many in here for him? How many of you go in on Sunday morning and you dread going in on Sunday morning because you know that you're going to have those small group leaders that show up late, don't show up at all, are not prepared? You know those people I'm talking about. They might be sitting right next to you. But our first principle in leading small is we need to be present. So let me unpack 3 points for you really quick. Show up predictably, show up mentally, show up randomly. Let me go back to the first one. Show up predictably. As a small group leader, and by the way, if you are a small group leader, I'm talking directly to you. If you are a ministry leader and you do not have a position description that articulates these points, you need to make sure you have these written down. So when you interview someone for a small group leader role, you can explain exactly what you're talking about. When I talk about show up predictably, it means not only show up on time, but it means it show up consistently. And why we use the word predictably is because we believe, if you took my breakout yesterday, we talked about relationships and how important relationships are, not only for adults, but also for our children. That as they grow up in developmentally, some of you know child development, as a parent, how important it is for you to nurture your child in a young age. Why? You're building into them security. You're building them to know that I can trust another human being, that mom or dad is going to be here consistently and routinely. And so I don't have to be insecure growing up as a young child, but that I can have have a trust in others. Guess why that's important? Because as they grow up, we need to let them know, and they need to be able to have so much security that when they look at a big God, that they grow up with so much security that to say, I can trust God no matter what. And so showing up predictably as a small group leader is more than just about showing up on time or showing up every single week. It's letting a child know that you love them so much that I'm investing my life in you. How many of your small group leaders have the passion that drive into your church on Sunday and they cannot wait to see their class of two-year-olds? If you don't have small group leaders with that kind of passion, then guess what? Our first reaction as ministry leaders is to blame the volunteer. But I'm a guy, as soon as I point the blame somewhere else, I stop. And I go, God, I'm a leader. If I have a volunteer who's not doing what I expect of them, that means I'm not casting vision the right way. I need to inspire them to love their kids with a passion, because a two-year-old needs to know that they can trust God no matter what. And if I can build that security into this child because I show up every week and I tell them I'm so excited to see you, then they are going to build security. They're going to have a healthy relationship with God. Does that make sense? Show up predictably. Show up mentally. What do you think that means? Before you answer, let me give you an illustration. You might have that small group leader next to you, so I apologize for outing you. You walk into a classroom, you're in a second grade room. You open the door, you duck because something just flew over your head. There's loud noise, and the small group leader is in the back of the room like this. What does it mean to show up mentally? It means this, that when you're passionate as a small group leader about your kids, that these things go away. That when you walk in, you are ready to mentally engage with your kids. I would say this, if you're a ministry leader and you have a small group leader that walks in and they walk in and they are visibly upset or they look shaken, don't sacrifice the hour of experience with the kids because you need a body in a room. Don't miss this principle. I had a ministry leader show up, a four-year-old small group leader. I'm not the children's pastor. I kind of oversee all of the spiritual growth in our church. I happen to be in that area. I saw this person because I knew them personally walk in the door. And so I stopped them because I know them personally. And I said, hey, is everything okay? Yeah. Just visibly, I said, hey, come on over here for a second. I pulled them into a side room. Turns out they just got a phone call that they had an uncle that was very close to them that just passed away. And she's crying right in front of me. Do you know what I did right away? I have a choice. I got to have this body in the room. Or I can model for my small group leader what I expect out of her. Because I care for the few so much that I want to say to you, hey, we need to minister to this need right now. We're going to go ahead and we're going to take care of your kids. Let's work together on how we can do that. But today is not the day for you to be in your small group. Because your kids are really excited, and let's figure out a way. If you want to say hi to them, let's go ahead and let's put a smile on to show them that you're predictable and that you're showing up. But let's talk specifically about an alternate plan to make sure that we do what we need to do today. Does that make sense? Your leaders need to show up mentally. But on the flip side, you as leaders need to make sure that they're there mentally. And if they're not, then that 1 hour, because guess how many hours do we have in a given year in the life of a child as a church? 40. You got 40 hours at best in the life of a child. Don't sacrifice those hours. Don't sacrifice those marbles. They mean too much. Is that making sense to you? Great. Next, show up randomly. I told the story yesterday in my breakout, and I got a few of you here, so I apologize for reiterating the story, but it's an awesome story. There was a middle school boy, a sixth grade boy. He was smaller than all the other boys. His name's Franklin, and he knows I tell this story because I've told him I tell your story. But Franklin is a sixth grader, and every time I'd walk through the church, again, I'm kind of over a lot of areas so they know Pastor Terry. I'm walking through the church, and this little boy, every time I walk by him, his eyes would light up. He wouldn't say anything. He would just be like, oh. And shame on me for passing by him two or three times without noticing that. But finally one day, I'm like, okay, that's the kid who just keeps staring at me like I got three heads. So I walk up to him, I say, hey, what's your name? Franklin? Franklin, yeah, hey, bud, how are you? And now I knew Franklin, I knew his family, I knew Franklin was shorter and smaller than all the other middle schoolers. He had a growth plate issue, his parents were really stressed out about it, he wasn't growing adequately, but Franklin loved baseball. He knew about my background in baseball. I was a baseball coach. I was a baseball player. He knew that. I led camps internationally for baseball. So he knew that about me. So he loved baseball. Pastor Terry played baseball, rock star. And so we're in a conversation and he said, I'd love to come, you know, on the trip with you. I mean, he just like a million miles a minute about baseball. And I'm realizing this kid really has made a connection with me. I mean, I could say anything. I could tell him to go run into the wall and he'll do that right now because there's a connection here. I didn't ask for it, but God just happened to do it. So I just looked at him and I knew the family. And so I said, you know what? I could take a moment. I could take a moment in time to invest in the few. So I looked at this young boy and I said, hey, do you have a baseball schedule? Are you playing baseball? Yeah. I said, if you get me a baseball schedule, I will try to make it to some of your games. He's like, oh, okay. And he turned around and didn't even say goodbye. He ran. The next morning, I get a phone call from mom. Terry, Franklin wants me to drive over to the church today. He doesn't want me to wait till Sunday. He wants me to drive today to come bring you his baseball schedule. And I remember saying to them, it's not a problem at all. Can you email it, fax it, or whatever? So gave me the baseball schedule. Bottom line is, I showed up unexpectedly to this child's baseball game. You'd have thought that he won the lottery. He's sitting in the dugout. He's looking. It's Pastor Terry. He's up at the plate. And I have to say, Franklin, turn around. The pitch is coming. But the moral of the story is, when you show up randomly, if you're a small group leader and you have your tribe and you're investing in the few, you've got 6 to 8 to 10 that these are your kids, and you take a moment as a small group leader to say, my job is not just to come every Sunday morning. My job is to love these kids, find out what these kids are passionate about, and show up randomly in their lives outside the walls of the church. Because anytime you show up outside the walls of the church, your influence exponentially grows. When you show up randomly, I can't tell you how much influence you have in a child's life. Franklin now is taller than me. He is a junior in high school. And every time Franklin sees me, even though he's a junior in high school, even though he's walking next to his friends, he gives me the biggest bear hug in the world because Franklin loves me to death. I showed up to one baseball game. And Franklin never has forgotten it. And I think he's also making fun of me because I'm shorter than him. Forgive me a hug. And guess what it is? So show up predictably, show up mentally, show up randomly, be present as a small group leader.
All right, I'm so glad to be here today in the portable orange bunker. Not only am I surrounded by an audience, a cast of thousands who are joining us in the bunker, but right here at the table, I've got some tremendous friends of the pod. You know them well. I'm here with Brooklyn and Joseph. Basically, they're doing interviews when Ashley and I are not around. So this is stand-in Ashley and stand-in Dave talking now. But here's the welcome, guys. But here's the great thing. These guys, we're talking small groups, saying these guys are absolute experts. Not only have they led small groups, but they've led small group leaders. And so we're really going to dive in. So Joseph, Brooklyn, how are you guys doing?
Hey, so good to be here.
Glad to be here.
We are surrounded by people. This is like a small group.
This is nice.
We should open in prayer or something. We're not going to do that. So we're talking small groups today, and I've got a question for either of you. Now, there are probably people listening right now who maybe don't know what a small group is. Can one of you explain what that means from a church ministry point of view?
Well, a small group is simply taking a group of students or children and saying that we're going to put 6 of them together. The ideal small group is about one leader for every 6 students.
Okay.
And so a lot of them can stretch all the way to 15 students, usually 2 leaders once you get to that place. But I mean, you've heard stories of them getting slightly larger than that. But an ideal small group is 6 students to 1 leader. And they can go right around to 15 before it starts to be difficult, not so small anymore.
Okay, hence the name small group.
Small group.
And let me add to that and say that small groups are even more than just a way to connect teenagers to your youth ministry. They're a way to connect them with each other and God. So just to kind of frame it up a little bit for you, we can define it in terms of how big it is and where it happens, but it's a connection point too.
Yeah. So good. Hey, so I know a lot of people who are listening to this come from a lot of different churches, and I know churches all call their small groups something different, life groups, small group, whatever it might be. What is your favorite terminology for a small group? Go.
I'm going to say when I was going places, people have an album called Fight Club. And so people were calling their groups Fight Clubs. And so I think it was around before my album, but I just think it was cool because when I got there, it fit so perfectly. We did a Fight Club concert.
Yeah. Fight Club, available at fightclub.com.
Come on.
I just call them groups. I know that's so creative, but groups always seem to work really well.
Mm-hmm. I think
whether it's a middle school group or high school group or guys group, girls group.
It's all covered under groups.
True. I think I like Fight Club, so I'm going to go with that for now, at least for this next question. What makes a Fight Club important in the formation of a child's faith?
Oh.
No, let's go with small groups. What makes a small group important in the formation of a child's faith?
Well, okay, so we're past this day where a pastor is just going to stand on a stage, be able to deliver a sermon that connects with every single person in the room. Mm. And so I would say that a student pastor or a kid's minister's or a kid pastor's number one job is to be, hey, how can I springboard what I'm about to say for some authentic conversations that are going to happen in a smaller group? So I would say it's imperative, because especially when you get to middle school age where they're seeking identity, or high school age where they're truly just seeking action and justice and passion, this gives them a chance to express their questions and say, hey, I have questions, but I don't agree with this. Yeah. I don't even know if I like this, or I don't even know if I like this whole Jesus idea. But it allows them to truly say, this is a safe place for me to vocalize that and us to have an authentic conversation. I think that's just one way.
I love how you started answering that question. We live in a world that's so customized and so individualized now. I've got three girls. They get onto Netflix. They've all got their own account, and Netflix knows what they've watched and what they need to watch next.
Yep.
And so I love that you said this is the opportunity really for a kid to get that individual questions answered and that faith development that they need. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Brooklyn?
Yeah, I think small groups have the ability to slow down community. I've heard it said, I think it was Brené Brown that said, hurriedness is the enemy of connection. And so I like to think that small groups become the ally. Like, they're the ally in your ministry that you need to slow down the flow, because the information's coming fast, their bodies are changing fast, their minds are changing fast, they're getting all of these different influences. Mm. So Sunday school, you know, is that time where you teach, but they also need a time to grow and connect and ask questions. So I really feel like it's the magic ability to slow down and really like sit with somebody and talk to them and learn from them.
Dang, that was good. Can you say that again? Brené Brown says,
hurriedness is the enemy of connection, and small groups become the ally.
I love that. Now, you mentioned Sunday school in there as well as part of that answer. Is there a difference between Sunday school and a small group?
I think it just depends on the church, because some churches actually do a really great job of having group environments on a Sunday morning or a Sunday night or on a Sunday afternoon.
Yep.
It depends if it's kind of in the flow of the church service, I would say, and how they set it up and what it comes out of and what it goes into. But if it's this 1 hour or 45 minutes of kind of teaching from a leader from the front, I would say that's more like a teaching environment and less of a conversation and journey.
So I love that. In fact, I would say that they work so well hand in hand. If your church is already doing, like, so to say, a Sunday school, it pairs well with a small group.
Yeah.
And so if you were to think of a pastor giving a sermon, it's not that far from a Sunday school class. Mm-hmm. And so if someone's teaching, it just seems, hey, it's just making sure that you plug in that conversation following that, whether it's the same day or another day. I've seen churches do it both on the same day. I've seen them talk and teach one day, and then they gather and have a small group discussion another day in the week, a Wednesday night. So I've seen it done so many different ways.
Yeah.
So the question I have off the back of this is, we all understand the importance of community, and we all understand that we grow in groups and that idea. Do you think there's an ideal age where kids should be starting to go into a small group environment?
Ooh, an ideal age. I mean,
I think when they naturally start going into groups as a human, you know, like when you start seeing them group up, then you know they're ready for a group. I think maybe not every kid is great at being in a group, just depending on the personalities and the way they're wired. Maybe they're more introverted or super outgoing, and so they're always in a group. But I think when they start to kind of look out and see other people in the world, then you can begin to think, like, how are they relating, and set up some structures for them to have influences that are outside of just themselves.
That's good. Now, I know you guys have both led small groups, but you've also led small group leaders. For the average church out there, do you think that there's anything that they can do to take their small group environments to the next level?
Oh my gosh, I get this question a lot. So I would say, for the leader who's saying, or for the pastor who's saying, how can I take this program to the next level? I think it comes down to the leaders. I think at the end of the day, find one great leader and ask him or her to find another leader like them. And every great person has a friend that's great alongside them.
Yeah.
And so it's easiest to springboard a friend than go cold call someone. But I think it's the key to it. It's not going to come down to the programming or the music, even though those are all icings on the cake. But I would say the true benefit is saying, hey, you're great. I need someone else that's great like you. Mm-hmm. And then if you can find a group of leaders that truly are bought into your vision and what's happening, I think that they'll transform your program.
Yeah,
That's really good. I was just thinking about the thing we just talked about, like when is a kid ready for a small group? And I was thinking about 4-year-olds playing soccer there for a minute, because like they can group up, but they don't know how to have a conversation yet. And so maybe there's a little bit of a litmus test, like when they're able to communicate.
Yeah. It's about K like, through five is usually where I see groups beginning.
Yeah. So I want to just say that in case, you know, because babies do group up, they get together, they hang.
Yeah. Start group. But back.
Fight club.
It's a whole new
baby
thing.
Style.
Okay. We went there. But how do we maximize? He was talking about leaders. And I feel like one of the things you can do is to maybe reframe the question when you ask a leader to participate, instead of saying, I really need you to help me be a small group leader. It's kind of giving them the vision for what the future looks like before you see it, kind of like 100 years from now, you know, this kid is going to be different because you walked with him. Will you walk with him, or will you walk with her, or will you begin the process of understanding this group? Mm. So really that, and another thing, I'm going to go on Michael Phelps on you guys right now. There was this like time in the Olympics, I think it was his 10th medal, he was going for it, and he swam really fast and won it, of course. But at the end, he like tosses his goggles and he's ticked off, and we don't know why. But we later find out that he was swimming blind the whole time because his glass is filled with water. Mm. And so for me, it's, I think, less try to be a small group leader and more train to be a small group leader, because it's in the training that you know how to do even when the worst thing comes up.
Yep.
So I think small groups sometimes don't work when we feel frustrated or stuck, not just as leaders, but as students, as parents. So if we can train our leaders, our students, our community to not give up, but to keep training in community, then when they're, you know, the thing happens that they didn't want to happen, they'll be ready to respond and still come out with a win.
Yeah, that's great. So far we've talked about small group size, we've talked about getting volunteers, we've talked about training those volunteers. For somebody out there who's at a church that's either maybe on the small side, or maybe they just haven't done a small group environment type thing yet, what would you say is the best place for them to start? Is it with recruiting volunteers? Is it with training? Is it with establishing a curriculum? Is it about working out what the best group size is? Where would you start?
I would say a great place to start is establish vision with your staff. Or if you're the only person on the staff, I think you need to fully buy into the vision and then communicate that vision to your lead pastor. Just because you want to make sure it is a different format, and it's saying, hey, we're bringing in other adults to trust our students with. And so I do think establishing that vision, saying we're moving to a small group model, is the first thing. And then I think you want to begin to find people. Even when people are shaky on the idea, when you begin to bring in solid leaders, people feel much more comfortable.
Yeah.
And so I think the first thing, let them know, hey, this is the direction we're going. And number two, start finding great people. And I think if you can find 4 or 5 great people out the gate, you'll see a lot of fellow staff members say, hey, I can totally see it now because these people are all stars.
Yeah, I say like definitely focusing in on the vision of why you do small groups in the first place is really important to communicate, especially when you have kids who they may not know who Jesus is or what his name is, but every human on the planet wants a connection. So just say, our goal is to connect. Like our goal is to have like a human relational connection that leads to a connection with God and a connection with others. So just kind of telling that story that, hey, every kid feels frustrated. Every kid wants to connect. Every kid battles feeling alone, and we can start there. The other thing that we can really do to begin is to really think about our message and also our community. Like, what are we doing to really help our small group leaders also be in community? It's hard to like teach it unless you can be it.
Yeah.
So maybe just helping your small group leaders feel like they belong so they know how to lead it. Because I've had that where we have small group leaders who really have the heart to do it, but they don't know how to be in community because no one's ever done that for them as an adult.
Yeah.
So just kind of being that for your leaders so they can begin to model and become it for the kids they lead.
Yeah, and then for the students or kids, I mean, you want to communicate to them too. If you already have a youth program and you're shifting to it, you want to make sure, and a great way to do it is just to do maybe a 2 or 3 week message and it land on small groups. If it could begin to reinforce community. Mm-hmm. And then in the end, the final message just kind of says, so here's why we've been doing this for the last 2 weeks. It's because we're moving to this model. Because I do think if you're already in one format, you'll definitely need to vision cast it to students if you're going to say we're passing you off to other people and asking you to open up.
That's good. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people who are in the church world would understand the idea of small groups for adults and the benefit that happens there. And maybe the idea of small group for students or kids is new to them. What, in your experience, as you've led small groups, as you've been a small group leaders, what benefits have you seen kids get from being in a consistent small group?
Oh man, they have fun. Like I got to say that first, right out of the gate, they have fun.
Yep.
And when they walk away beaming, like I just had fun, you know, they're going to like want to come back. And I don't think it's a bait. I think it's like life. Like, okay, I just had fun. So I think that really helps. Another thing that happens is just knowing, hey, somebody knows my name and that I exist. And I think that's really important. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think you're fully known. It's lifelong connections. I had my guys in high school walk through all those years with them. They graduated high school. Now they've graduated college. Now they're in about 2 years past college getting jobs all throughout Atlanta and some other cities. And we still gather and talk and we still hang out. And so it's connections that last a lifetime. And I just think that's the most crucial thing. You find somebody, you become a family, and those are people that you can lean on. Those are brothers, in my case, that they can really say, hey, they're for me, and I have a leader who's always looking out for my back.
Yeah. So I agree. I think the idea of belonging is super important, but I bet there's somebody who's listening today going, hey, we get that. We understand that. But doesn't that make the church become more inwardly focused? If everybody's in their own separate small groups, do they really have the opportunity to welcome guests in for the first time? What would you say to that?
Well, I would just say right away, if you're genuinely teaching people how to connect, they will know how to connect.
Yep.
Because they will be a product of what they're learning.
Mm.
So our goal in our new church is to learn everybody's story. Our question isn't like, okay, are you going to come to our small group? It's what's your story? Mm. What's the thing in your life that's standing in the way? Like, where are you stuck and how can we help? And so if you begin to train people to ask questions like that and to think about each other in that way, even if you're meeting in a more like exclusive group, they're going to just be wired to reach out and to talk.
Yeah.
And you're going to be training your leaders to do the same. So it's pretty cool to watch that happen.
I mean, I think your program has to celebrate when groups grow. And obviously, once you get past, if you go from 15, and my group went from 15 to 30, and it was time for us to, we call it multiplying, but it was time for us to become two groups. I think that's the time for our church to celebrate and say, the reason why we're multiplying, the reason why you're becoming two groups now is because you guys did the Great Commission. Mm-hmm. You did exactly what the Bible calls us to do.
That's so good.
And it refocuses the students to understand. We're kind of being, we're being pulled away, but we're being pulled away because that's how this walk works. We're being pulled away for a greater purpose.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's our responsibility as church leaders to say, hey, this is what it's all about. Your group is now becoming two because you guys were courageous enough to invite your friends.
Yeah. So you've seen small groups in student world become an outreach tool.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. I mean, when you say, hey, I want you to come meet my friends, it's much easier than saying, I want you to come to my church.
Yeah.
And that's just reality. When you're really getting practical on the ground, on the front lines with the students, and they're walking through their hallways, you're just trying to equip them and saying, hey, how can you boldly go forward? And to say, hey, I've got a great group of friends. I just want you to meet them.
Yeah.
And like, well, it's at my church, but you got to meet them. People are much more inclined to say, I would love to meet these people you've been talking about.
Yeah. And most of the time, a small group leader has a cell phone connection with a kid. Like, so they're getting a text from you. Hey, who is that? Oh, it's my small group leader. What do they do? Well, they just check on me and take care of me and look out for me. Well, where, like what? Yeah. Like the questions are just absolutely just there because another kid's going to notice you have a connection with an adult and it's safe.
It's not creepy.
And like, wow. And they look on Instagram and now we've got a picture of us in our group and what we're doing. And it's such a beautiful way to just show, okay, this is what our hope is, that you would connect, not just now, but in the future in your life, like as an adult. Because really, isn't that what we're doing? Is we're teaching them how to be an adult who loves and knows Jesus and connects with others as an adult someday. So to get to do that and to try and to fail and to like kind of work it out while they're learning how to, you know, be who they're going to become. So
I want to pick up on something you said there about leveraging your cell phone, leveraging Instagram. How can small group leaders out there who are like, how can I leverage technology to build stronger relationships with the kids in my small group? What would you say to them?
Well, I would say, first of all, they're not going to ask that question first. The first question they're going to say is, how can I like explode the internet, because it's driving me crazy, because they're going to have an issue with the internet before they
turn off notifications.
They're going to have an issue with it before they say it's awesome.
Yeah.
So what you're going to say is, well, I have a tool for you. I can help you.
Yeah.
Either teach them, you know, how to create a list, or how to, you can even teach kids in your group social like etiquette on text, like group text messages. What's that like? You can teach them how to do that. You can get, there's a Lead Small app where the small group leader can put their name in. It's super, super, super like kosher. A parent knows, okay, here's the whole small group. It's legit. It's not some person weird, like knowing your number. I would recommend using any kind of extra layer like that to solidify your integrity and your influence.
Yeah.
So definitely do that. And then I would say, I would just be careful if you ever post anything as a group leader, get permission before you post. Permission before you post. Never post a kid's face till you ask permission from them or their parents.
Yep.
So
I mean, I'll go practical. I'll say choose your platform.
Yeah,
okay. You've got Instagram, you've got Twitter, you got Snapchat, you got Facebook, and you got all these platforms. Mm-hmm. And I think if you try and download all of them to your phone tomorrow and say, I'm about to go hard on all of these platforms,
then you will just be Brooklyn Lindsay and not know. I'm just kidding. Have no clue.
But you'll find yourself completely overwhelmed because you're like, I can't keep juggling all this. I lost my life. And so I would say, hey, really look at them and say, which is their best platform for me? Because they all do something a little bit different. And maybe it's easier for you to just throw a thought out there, a devotional thought at the top of a day, and say, Twitter's for me. Yeah. Or maybe you're like, I love taking pictures, so Instagram's for me. Or I love just staying connected fully in Facebook. I mean, it's really determining what's the best platform for you. Yeah. And then just saying, hey, I want to be consistent enough for my students to know this is where they can find me.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, whatever you do, communicate it to your group.
Yes.
Because you could say, I'm going to do Twitter, and they're not on Twitter. But if you say, okay, I know not everybody has this app, WhatsApp, whatever.
Yep.
You could even send an email to parents saying, hey, I've decided we're going to use this specific app. I imagine some of you don't your kids to use this.
Come on.
I'm not trying to exclude them. Is there something, another way I can communicate with them personally? So then you're just covering your bases and making sure you're not being, you know.
So I want to pick up on two things as a follow-up. Joe, I know we're doing this on one day, and by tomorrow this information will be completely obsolete.
I know.
What are the kids on nowadays, social media-wise? Hit us.
What are they on? Well, they're loving Snapchat. It's hard to keep up, but Snapchat's kind of fading back now because Instagram has added the story feature.
Yep.
And so I would say Instagram is a safe bet. It's just a safe bet. I find young adults are gravitating to Twitter. So young adults and adults love Twitter. And then Facebook, everyone's on. It is the modern day white pages. Yep. So yellow pages, white pages, that is Facebook. So it's pretty standard. I mean, if you give somebody's name, they're going to search them out on Facebook. That is our generation's.
Yeah, I'm grouping you with me in that. I'm so sorry. I'm grouping both of you in with me.
Okay.
We just use Facebook differently than the students use Facebook. Yeah. They're still there. A lot of people saying the students don't do that anymore. No, they do.
They do.
They just use it for a different reason than
reference.
What we do.
It's like like the dictionary Encyclopedia Britannica situation.
Yeah, totally.
Come on.
Hey, my teenage girls stopped texting me. Now they just DM me through Instagram all the time.
I know.
And I'm like, come on, you've got an app there that messages me direct.
It's because you can link those videos and share them.
You know that they're going to do that. And so, you know, okay, that's how my kids are going to communicate. And that's as a small group leader. If you start getting those pings through a certain messenger, then turn your notifications on for that one, but don't keep it on for all of the others.
But here's why it's so important, though, because your students or your kids are literally active every day of the week. And so when you only get one day with them, you only get a Sunday or a Wednesday with
them.
This is the moment where you literally can sit with them and know what they've been up to. So I think it just means something when you're like, hey, I saw that you got that award on Thursday, or hey, tell me about what you did at the mall the other day. You had me cracking up. And it means like, hey, they're still noticing me when I'm not here. And that's why I think it's so crucial.
Yes, I could not agree more. This is so good because in my role as a social media director at North Point, I'm constantly telling pastors, use social media gather, stop posting and just listen. Listen to people and get information from them so that when you meet with them 3D, you've got questions to ask about, hey, I heard your kid celebrated a birthday. I heard that so-and-so, I heard it's your anniversary. that means more to them, and it does for students as well, right?
Oh, it means so much.
It's also like the perfect to-do list for you as a minister. Like, for example, you know, in youth ministry, you get the notifications. This is how many birthdays I have today. You already have your list of people to reach out to. You already have. You don't have to, like, create, go do some church software that figures it all out. No, just look, okay? There's six people I can reach out to today because they're special. They were born.
I just want to send a special message to all the lead pastors who are listening to this podcast right now.
Oh, no.
Seriously, rewind 30 seconds or a minute and listen to what they just said. Because this doesn't just apply to students. It applies to adults as well. Listen, stop posting. Listen to on social media and write a list out of the important people in your church, the significant people, the families that are crucial. And listen to them on social media so that when you have time with them, this is the thing that annoys me. Churches spend 1 hour each week with their people, but they've got the opportunity to spend the other 167 hours with them on social media, but they don't because they use it as a megaphone, not a telephone.
And not just information, but you can get some real clues because we didn't get to talk about serving others in small groups right now, which I love to talk about later.
Yeah.
But this is a way that you can find out what breaks their heart.
Yes.
Because they're going to post about it.
Come on.
And you're going to know, okay, now this is what, that's what you're going to go to as a leader. You're going to go sit with them and you're going to be like, hey, this broke your heart in half. I saw those emojis.
Yes.
I know.
And you know, take that one.
And actually, you actually said something about it. You said, I wish I could change this.
Yes.
And take don't know how, but let's start somewhere.
Let's start somewhere.
And as
church leaders, we can take that one step further. Twitter allows us to do location searches for hashtags. Search for the within a 10-mile radius of your church for the hashtag depressed, anxious, sad, divorced, whatever it might be, and start following respond to those people. They live in your community.
I know, I'm just like, it's kind of creepy, but actually, whoa.
Yeah, but it gives us a chance to listen to what the wider community is saying rather than, this is awesome.
Well, because you at times can connect with them before you talk to them about Jesus. It's incredible to just say, let me talk to you. Let me listen to you.
What's your story?
Because here's the truth. People connect with your church before they connect within your church.
Oh, wow.
Let me say that again. People connect with your church before they connect within your church.
So good.
Now, I've got to follow up, Brooklyn. You mentioned something, and it was in passing, and I just wanted to go back to it, about leaders connecting with parents. How important is it for a small group leader of a student to connect with that student's parent?
It's incredibly important because that parent is going to feel frustrated as a parent, even no matter what their circumstances are, no matter what their background is, they're going to feel frustrated. They're going to feel like they don't have enough time. And sometimes parents bring their kids to church because they feel like that is the best thing they can do.
Yep.
We were just talking about this a few minutes ago. Like they don't feel like they have anything to give, but they want to give something more. So I'm going to drop my kid off and hope someone else can help.
Mm.
So it's important to notice them. It's important to know their name. If you can't find out their name, just find out their story through their kid. So the kid knows, even though my parent can't connect, maybe they're on a bus for 5 hours going to work back and forth. They can't come to church or whatever reason. Maybe they're not even in their life at all.
Yeah.
You care about me enough to know my heritage, to know my parents.
Yeah.
So you want to connect with the parent. And you also want to give the parent tools that they need to be a better parent because they want to be a better parent. And you have that ability and those resources like within like all of the things that you're doing already. So whatever you're teaching, you tell them what you're teaching.
Okay.
You share it with them.
I want to get even more practical here. Okay. Because I've got teenage girls. And so I would love to know both of your answers to this. Say you're a small group leader and a teenager, sex doesn't matter. Say a teenager opens up about something that is, you know, it's super significant to that person's safety or their well-being or their development, something along those lines. At what point do you inform the parent of that without breaking the trust of the student?
Oh, well, every time. I mean, there's like, we talk about three hurts, right?
Three hurts.
You know, three hurts. You want to talk about what
if
they are?
If you're hurting yourself, if you're being hurt, or if you're planning to hurt someone else, if you're going through either one of those three or any of those three, that's where you would say it's no longer a volunteer's issue. A volunteer is to go to a staff, and a staff then figures out the best course of action, which is always going to be talking to the parent and possibly even connecting them to counseling.
Yeah.
And every state has a different like regulation about what you have to report, mandatory reporting laws. So if you want to Google your state's mandatory reporting laws, it's just a quick Google search. You can find out what you are legally responsible to report if some kind of abuse or anything like that was, shared with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so
and if they're
good.
Saying it, they want help. I always tell leaders, listen, if it was said to you, I know it's difficult to pass this ball, but they were passed. They were saying it to you because they need help. Let us help you at this point.
Yep. So would you recommend that the small group leader speak with the student and say, I'm going to tell your parents this? Or would you recommend that they go and tell the parents and then tell the student?
I mean, I've had small group leaders sit with the student as they're talking to their parent. And I've gone along with a small group leader with their student as we're having these conversations. So I think it literally is, how much do you need my support? Do you want my support? Is it okay with the family if I come sit with you? And a lot of times they'll welcome you in there. So I do think every situation is a little bit unique.
Yeah, I feel like in those situations, I kind of run this script in my head, because every person can look back over their childhood and middle school, high school years and think, I wish the church could have been something different for me, whether I was sharing something vulnerable or I needed something or had a question. And so I always try to think, how can I as a leader be the church I always needed? Yeah. How can I be the church I always needed?
Yeah.
And so if someone's sharing something with me that's vulnerable, I think, what would I have needed in this situation? And it's always an adult who knows more than me that can help guide me to a place where I can either get answers or help.
Yeah.
So that's you would good. Always kind of lean toward that direction, I think, for sure.
Hey, this has been fantastic. You guys have dropped so many nuggets of wisdom and gold here. So I know that anybody listening to this, you're going to want to check out the show notes, and you can get them in all the usual places. So make sure you do that. I'm sure there's a lot of helpful resources that you guys have shared. Thank you so much for being in our Think Orange bunker with us. Thanks for being such great friends of the pod as well. And you guys, everybody's going to know you soon, because you are, of course, replacement Dave and replacement Ashley. But when we're not here,
I feel so valued and loved.
We made it.
Yeah. We started.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks so much for having us.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that was some really good stuff. Dave, you were able to pull out some really practical things with Joe and Brooklyn. Mm. And what I loved the most specifically was they just did an awesome job reminding us about why small groups matter. I mean, as ministry leaders, there are a lot of things we have to think about when leading a growing ministry.
Yeah.
The production pieces, the speakers, volunteers, events, the physical space. Mm-hmm. But what I loved so much is Brooklyn and Joe really emphasized that small groups are more relational than they are systematic.
Yeah, it's more than just a program, right? It's an opportunity for kids to have a connection to and in community.
Yeah, and it made me think about just like getting in the weeds with these kids and wrestling through their doubts and questions that are actually a normal part of the journey of developing an authentic faith. I mean, that's where real life change happens.
I totally agree. Small groups model what Jesus did, right? Mm-hmm. He did this, and he didn't do it because it was easy. He did it because it was effective. And sometimes we misconstrue that. We get that mixed up a little bit.
Totally.
What's effective isn't always easy, and what's easy isn't always effective.
Absolutely.
So I think, what they unpacked there just really highlighted for me that idea that when we get kids in community, that's when life change can totally happen.
Totally. And I think like as listeners, and Dave, even you and I, if we think back to when we were in elementary school, we were in high school, and we put ourselves back there. You know, I always say that small group leaders, they're gonna lead a small group for one of two reasons, either because somebody was there for them or somebody wasn't there for them. Mm. And I think if we put ourselves back there and you think like, what was I doing in life then? What would have been a benefit to me? What would have helped me? Yeah. I think that we're either going to say we're going to name somebody, or we're going to say, I wish I would have had somebody.
Yeah, that is so good. That is so good. And plus, I mean, Brooklyn and Soja, you could listen to them for hours. They're awesome people. In fact, they're so awesome. We love them so much. They're such fantastic friends of the pod, and they made the bunker their home, that we're actually going to use them a few more times.
Yes, we are, because they're so awesome, and I love them.
We're going to have them as our stand-in Ash and stand-in Dave.
I like that.
So we're going to use them in some coming episodes. Just when we're not available and we've got other things on, they're going to step in and they're going to do some interviews for us and that sort of thing. So you guys are going to absolutely learn to love them. Well, as always, thank you so much for listening to the Think Orange podcast and being part of this Think Orange family. We love you guys, right?
We do.
It's so good. And we can't wait to have more episodes where we talk about ideas and conversations that we hope will help you influence the next generation.
If you don't want to miss an episode, you can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and we would love to hear from you. Please leave us a review.
Yes.
Tell us what song you want to hear.
Yes.
Tell us your favorite moment in the episode.
And leave 5 stars, obviously. obviously.
Of course.
Especially for the singing. If nothing alone, leave it for the singing. Hey, we also really want to hear from you. So I want to encourage you all to go to thinkorangepodcast.com. There's a form there where you can fill out some questions, leave your thoughts and comments. We want to ask the questions that you want answered. But that's also the place to get all of your show notes, Ashley. Did you know that?
It is.
If you're not reading the show notes, you're missing half the podcast.
And you know what we're also doing now in the
what
show notes?
Are we doing?
We have timestamps. So you can actually jump right into the podcast in the exact moment that you want to listen.
And is your singing listed in that?
It should be.
It totally should be. And there's also like a lot of information about all of our hosts, links to how you can contact them and a whole bunch of tweetable things, everything like that. So make sure you go to thinkorangepodcast.com. Well, we'll see you next time when we have another brand new episode of the podcast. And as always, remember, when you think next generation, think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.